Ugh, where are we?
We're in London.
Yeah, I know that, but where in London?
Well, the Imperial War Museum, Southwark. It's quite something, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know, I don't care. I'm knackered. I hate hitchhiking.
You're knackered?
Yeah.
My ankle's still sore from our escape.
You make it sound so heroic. I had to carry you for at least, like, 100 yards. I still don't know how I did it.
Yeah, probably adrenaline, yeah, with all those wolves behind us. That and, of course, my relatively lightweight.
You're relatively lightweight. Yeah. You're at least 90 kilos.
That's nothing these days.
Oh, well, in any case, those weren't wolves. Those were just someone's dogs out for a walk.
Well, how on earth are we supposed to know that? They sounded a hell of a lot like wolves.
Oh, yeah, and you know what wolves sound like.
Actually, yes, I do know what wolves sound like. Yeah, absolutely. I also, surprisingly enough, I know a little bit about the Imperial War Museum. That might actually be good for our introduction. What do you think?
Yeah, well, off you go then. I can't be bothered.
Oh, Izzy. Here we go again. We can't start every episode like this.
Hello and welcome to the Poetry Pod. My name is Izzy.
And I'm Orlando.
And we're two people who like poetry.
Love poetry.
Right. Who love poetry, and we want to share that love.
With you.
In our first season, we'll be looking at British culture through the lens of poetry. Welcome to the Poetry Pod. Season 1, Britain through the Bards.
Welcome, dear listener, to the Big Smoke. Good old London town. And more specifically, to the Imperial War Museum. And yes, it really is as grand as it sounds. Founded in 1917, it has expanded into a group of 5 museums in London, Duxford and Manchester, and even has a museum on board a ship, HMS Belfast. It aims to, and I quote, provide for and to encourage the study and understanding of the history of modern warfare. Well, where better to enjoy our 5th episode, War and Empire? Even though large tracts of Europe and many old and famous states have fallen or may fall into the grip of the Gestapo and all the odious apparatus of Nazi rule, here we shall not flag or fail. We shall go on to the end. We shall fight in France. We shall fight on the seas and oceans. We shall fight with growing confidence and growing strength in the air. We shall defend our island, whatever the cost may be. We shall fight on the beaches. We shall fight on the landing grounds. We shall fight in the fields and in the streets. We shall fight in the hills. We shall never surrender.
Actually, Lando, I would rather you surrendered because people are starting to look. Please stop. Listen, this museum would be even grander if we could actually go in. Do you have any cash?
No, I don't think I do. I spent my last £2.50 on a sausage roll.
On a sausage roll? Well, I don't remember that. I love sausage rolls.
Well, you were asleep. I didn't want to wake you up.
Yeah, very gallant of you.
Well, I thought so. I tell you what. Maybe Dr. Jessica Bunshu could help us. She said she'd meet us here.
Right. Where is she?
Well, she said she'd meet us here at the entrance. Ah, look. Here she comes. Jessica, we're over here.
Oh, hi. How are you both doing?
Hi.
Very well. A little bit short of cash, but otherwise good. How are you?
Oh, I'm very well. And in fact, you know, I have a season pass, a season ticket, so we can all get in through my family ticket.
That's fantastic.
Oh, that's fantastic.
So
oh,
we are now officially family members, are we?
Yeah, well, please, pretend to be. On your best behavior, okay?
We will.
Yeah,
we will.
We will be.
We will indeed. I hope you've brought some sausage rolls, because Izzy is seriously hungry. So, in we go. This way, I think, ladies first.
Ooh, thank you.
Oh, thanks.
You.
Very gentlemanly.
I always am gentlemanly. So, here we are.
Oh, that is pretty nice.
Gosh, this atrium, it just keeps going up and up.
Yeah. How high do you think that is?
It's massive.
It looks
and those suspended aircraft, do you know anything about them?
Well, it's funny you should ask.
No.
You know, I am an aircraft enthusiast. Did you know that, Izzy?
I'm not surprised.
Yes.
You're
not surprised.
Well, that, see that over there? See that beautiful streamlined thing over there? That is a Supermarine Spitfire,
ooh.
Which, of course, was very active throughout the war, but particularly in the Battle of Britain.
Recognize anything else you do? I'd be very impressed.
Is that a rocket?
That is certainly a rocket.
Oh, wow.
Izzy, that was shot by the Germans. Do you know what that is?
No, do tell me.
It's a V2 rocket.
Right.
It's got, like, they've exposed the side of it. It's got, because you can see inside the engine. That used to be shot from Peenemünde and flew all the way over the English Channel to London, to bomb London. And the person who invented that was later abducted by the Americans, Wernher von Braun, and he was like the mastermind of the Apollo program. So actually, that rocket there is the beginning of the Apollo program.
Oh, yeah.
You could argue.
It should be in the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C.
You could say that, yeah. But well, we got it in London. We're going to keep it.
I know, you like to keep things.
Yeah. And there's a Messerschmitt up there, Messerschmitt, and a Sopwith Camel. Looking at these aircraft, I feel very inspired. It reminds me of a poem. Have either of you heard of John Gillespie McGee?
No, I haven't.
He was a Canadian-British pilot and killed, actually, in the Second World War. But he wrote one of the most famous poems about flying that have ever been written. Beautiful poem called High Flight. Can I read it to you both?
Absolutely.
Yes,
yeah.
Please.
Yeah?
But maybe over here in the corner.
No, it's a great acoustic here. I'd like to use it. Okay, so here we go. High Flight by John Gillespie McGee. Oh, I have slipped the surly bonds of earth and danced the skies on laughter-silvered wings. Sunward I've climbed and joined the tumbling mirth of sun-split clouds and done 100 things you have not dreamed of. Wheeled and soared and swung high in the sunlit silence. Hovering there, I've chased the shouting wind along and flung my eager craft through footless halls of air. Up the long, delirious, burning blue, I've topped the windswept heights with easy grace, where never lark nor even eagle flew. And while with silent, lifting mind I have trod the high, untrespassed sanctity of space, put out my hand and touched the face of God. Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, and very fitting for this place, I have to say.
Certainly is. And, I mean, I think he flew Spitfires, actually, if I'm not very much mistaken.
Speaking of high, Orlando, when was the last time you had a shower?
What on earth are you guys really turning on the charm today?
Orlando, I have to agree with Izzy. You know, there's a restroom right here in the over to the right.
You can smell me as well, can you?
Well,
okay.
At least we could all do with a little freshening up, probably.
That's
very democratic
and diplomatic of you. At least she can be nice about it. Okay.
I was trying to be polite.
Were you? Didn't sound like it. Okay. I'll go and ablute. I'll see you both in a minute.
Yes, you then. Right. So, Jessica, your last name is Buntru. That sounds very German.
Yes. Well, I mean, my maiden name actually is a Scottish name, Grant.
Oh, wow.
Whenever I do speak to a German, initially I had to contextualize it as in Cary Grant, and that was always helpful. But yes, I, in fact, met my husband in Tucson, Arizona, back in the early 90s when he was an exchange student, excited about, you know, cowboys and midnight shopping in Safeway that you could never do in Germany. So, yeah.
And
that's what brought me to a whole different continent.
Wow. And so now you live in Stuttgart and you teach at the University of Stuttgart. So.
Yeah, that's correct. In the English Literatures and Culture Department. It's great fun. I do a lot with Irish poetry.
Oh, that's brilliant. Because I think there's the Troubles exhibition here as well, isn't there?
Well, I do hope we can take a peek in there. I'm quite interested.
Definitely should. And Orlando told me you're not only a scholar, but also a poet yourself.
Yes, well, I mean, it's sort of, you know, wearing two different caps that sometimes one subsumes the other. But yes, I love to write poetry. It was my first love, and my doctorate is in creative writing and literature.
That's brilliant.
I still, when I get a chance between semesters, write a poem now and again.
Oh, well, do you happen to have one with you?
Well, in my pocket. I might have this one that has just been published in the newest issue. Let me just grab it here. Let me unfold it. I usually don't carry poems with me, but I do happen to have one.
Fantastic. And this
particular poem is actually in the voice of a dramatic monologue. You know, that's great fun when you can kind of take on a different persona. As I said, it's going to be actually in an Irish publication right now in The Moth, and I was kind of grateful that they took on such an odd little dramatic monologue. I'll recite it then. Thank you for asking. Midnight Supper at the Winter Palace, St. Petersburg, 1905. I'm hardly at an age when fidelity is attractive. Do you see those soldiers in the mirror? Their elkskin breeches took two to pull on. Try the chicken creams and lobster salad. If you look in the corner, you'll see Kobot, the imperial chef, in his white apron, watching. I bet he's looking for his master or his master's plate. Look hopeful. He's turning this way. Oh, I love when a man's gaze falls on me. If only they knew how I practiced this pout. Russian men are easy to fool, particularly the nobility. Poor dear, our cold nights must make you miserable. The Neva is frozen hard as its granite key. Wind is lashing at the walls even now, but men are made crazy by the cold. With a little sturgeon in their stomachs, you can take them completely into your fur robe and rub them warm. Winter is the great leveler. They become boys. They need us. And if you keep him out until dawn to see the fires of the Aurora Borealis, he'll weep, I promise. By then, he will be champagne drunk, and you can reach your hand into those tight breeches, your fingers still encrusted with creams or emeralds, and he'll hardly notice. What pets they are when they're drunk. He won't even have the energy to reach into your satin bodice, unless that's what you want. Don't worry if he doesn't speak French. He'll understand French, and that's all that matters.
Wow, that was great, Jessica. Thanks.
Oh.
So we've had Arizona, we've had Scotland, we've had Germany, and now Russia comes into it as well. So that's quite a mix of different places.
Indeed. Well, I guess that's actually why I started my love with poetry in the first place was the ability to time travel. It's so great, it's such great fun to be able to go back into the past, for instance. And there was a long time I was deeply interested in, you know, the czars and particularly Nicholas II and the great tragedy that kind of stands just off stage in any discussion of him. And so I actually had written also a poem about his. The bones of his daughter sort of being discovered by the forensic lab kind of looking at them. And so this is another poem where I'm thinking about things slightly off stage in that same setting, this time in before the event.
Oh, wow, that's super interesting. I mean, I guess that kind of links us, right, the kind of traveling through poetry theme.
Well, yeah, I mean, don't you guys love to do that?
Yeah, I mean that's what we're here for, really.
And this museum really sets the scene for such a time travel.
Definitely, yeah, absolutely. Ooh, I think Orlando's coming back now.
Oh, but you know, one thing I wanted to quickly do before we move on is I would love to step into the gift shop because my father, he's a big Spitfire fan, and I understand they have Spitfire tie slides here. So I'm going to see you guys in just a moment. I'll be back in a few.
Yeah, hi. Sure. Oh, you're off. Are you? Yeah. Okay. I'll see you in a minute. Yeah. Oh, that's better. I feel as fresh as a daisy.
Fantastic.
Look, I got you something, Izzy.
Oh.
Look, still feel a bit bad about the sausage roll.
You should, yeah.
Here.
Oh, what's this? A lunchbox?
It's a lunchbox, yeah. I don't know. I mean, I found this room which had showers in it. It actually looked rather good. And there was, like, several of these things. It looked like a buffet. So I thought, no one will notice.
Buffet in the shower? Did you break into the staff room and steal someone's lunchbox?
I didn't break in. The door was open. And these things were just lying there. So I thought this is some sort of hospitality gift. Just took one for you. Be grateful.
Security alert. Security alert. It appears there has been a serious case of theft on site.
No.
Would all staff please assemble in the staff room? Security alert. Security alert.
I've just found the most marvelous things at that gift shop. It was so interesting. Anything going on here?
No.
I just heard an announcement.
Oh, that was.
Did you hear that? I didn't hear.
No,
anything.
I didn't hear. No, I didn't.
No. Announcement?
No.
Okay. Well,
everything's fine. Yeah.
All right. Well,
precious
well,
a daisy.
Anyway, I guess then let's just get going. I think that we should head straight to the First World War Gallery.
That's
no?
an excellent
Absolutely.
Idea. Let's
go right now. Yeah.
Quickly. Yeah.
Okay. Well, then let's go.
Jessica, what is it? I mean, while we're walking towards this gallery, and we're walking relatively quickly, what is it about war that defines British history? Because, I mean, Izzy and I, we were talking about this, weren't we, when we were thinking about this series, and you can't avoid war. War is a defining quintessential characteristic of Britain and what makes Britain. What is it? It's like we've fought everyone over the last 1,000 years, haven't we?
It appears that way. I mean, you know a great deal about that. Do you know how many different conflicts there have been, or how many countries they've gotten in a little bit of a tussle with?
I can't tell you offhand. Has he got any ideas?
It's a crazy amount. It's like, I think of the 193 countries that the UN lists, I think Britain's been in conflict with 170 of them.
What? So nearly all, basically.
So basically.
I mean, does that surprise us?
Not really,
does it? I mean, in order to be a British empire, I guess that we would have had to actually conquer all of those countries. So it stands to reason, doesn't it?
Well, I love the story of these British soldiers with their longbows, and how they were, sort of doing the longbow first. And then what battle was that in? I think that,
that must have been Agincourt. Yeah?
Oh, yes.
And
yes.
When was it? 1415, I think.
Yeah.
If my research is correct.
I mean, it was left thousands of French dead because they had played that so well by first doing the longbow before they sent in the rest
of
the cavalry.
Absolutely. And that, of course, war has been a great inspiration for many, many writers, many poets, playwrights. I mean,
could it be Shakespeare?
Henry the Fifth.
Yes.
Correct. Yeah,
yeah,
absolutely.
I mean, he was quite brutal. I think he executed thousands of French prisoners after that battle.
But it's actually a speech, the St. Crispin's Day speech from Henry V. That's quoted a lot. And in fact, when Britain started leaving the EU in 2016, I'm going back in time to the First World War, in 2016, they actually quoted in the European Parliament, the Independence Party, they quoted the St. Crispin's Day speech, which has become this synonymous with British independence, British might. But it's interesting that you mention he was obviously quite a ruthless tyrant. But having said that, I mean, it is a phenomenal speech. He says, this story shall the good man teach his son, and Crispin Crispian shall ne'er go by from this day to the ending of the world, but we in it shall be remembered, we few, we happy few, we band of brothers. Yeah. We all know that, don't we?
Yeah.
Well, I mean, that sounds so much like, sort of the World War One, feeling, and I do believe they use that battle as a metaphor for the First World War.
For sure, yeah.
Band of brothers.
Maybe. Yeah. I mean, what other battles can we think of? Or
Waterloo, of course.
Waterloo.
Immortalized forever.
Yeah. Yeah, yes. Of course. Yeah, by a Swedish band, of course. Very appropriate. And what else is? Of course, there's. We've been fighting the French for over 1,000 years as well. I don't think that's changed. I mean, Brexit has probably ushered in the next millennia of fighting against the French, don't you think?
No, you're being a lot more subtle now. The British just kind of invading the south of France with, engineers.
That's true. We're invading and we're starving them. Of course, the old siege tactics was in the old days. Don't let them have food now. Don't let them have vaccinations.
Mm.
It's the new tactic. Yeah. So there's all of that. There's also when we went to the seaside, didn't we quote Tennyson?
I can feel you reciting the entirety of the Charge of the Light Brigade now.
Ah,
you've got to step in.
Yeah, before you do that, Orlando, quick summary. So, battle, Baklava? was it that?
Balaclava.
Balaclava. Yeah. Baklava.
Baklava is something you eat.
That's delicious.
I'm just thinking about food.
I know, eat your sausage roll.
I wish I had one. The Battle of the Sausage Roll. It's very disrespectful. Anyway, so, you know, troop basically being sent on a suicide mission. Yeah. Everyone dies at the end. Great.
Yeah, yeah.
But I know how much you love quotes, so here's a bit. Here's a quote from the Charge of the Light Brigade, which goes, "Forward, the Light Brigade. Was there a man dismayed? Not though the soldier knew someone had blundered. Theirs not to make reply, theirs not to reason why, theirs but to do and die. Into the valley of death rode the 600.
Thank you, Izzy.
Ooh,
thank
nice.
You. My appetite
short
has
and
been
sweet
stilled.
Too.
Short and sweet. Yes, exactly. 21st century. We only speak in titbits now, don't we?
Yeah. So yeah. It has to be short enough for a tweet.
That's true. Sure, exactly. And if it's not short enough for a tweet, cut it.
Cut it. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. So.
Well, you know, I do think we're almost there now, and I see just around the corner is the First World War Gallery. Shall we enter?
Let's go straight in,
absolutely.
Quickly. Yeah, I can hear sort of, yeah, I've got good sound effects, actually, sort of shells and
ugh, goodness.
The sounds of screams in the distance.
Well, I mean, can you think of any of these poets who were in those trenches?
Well, there were the war poets, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the so-called war poets. Who are we thinking of?
Sassoon?
Yeah.
Wilfred Owen?
Wilfred Owen.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Isaac Rosenberg. You know, he wrote on little scraps of paper in the trenches.
Isaac Rosenberg, that's a new name.
Yeah,
to me.
He was Jewish.
Yeah.
Died in 1918. I mean, you know, basically, the First World War wiped out a whole generation of British poets. Such
it
a
totally
tragedy.
Did. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, what
German as well. I think it's quite interesting. I don't know, in Germany at least, a lot of the expressionist poets started off being really enthusiastic about the war and, you know, big changes coming, and then obviously by the end of the war, they were, well, either dead or really, you know, disillusioned.
Disillusioned, yeah.
Yeah,
right, yeah.
Well, with good point. I mean, Owen, you know, when they found, I think, you know, one of the most famous poems that we're going to perhaps get a chance to explore soon, they found among his papers a preface where he said, "All a poet can do is warn."
Mm, yeah.
Tell the truth, yeah. Right? You know.
And Owen, funnily enough, I think he was very at the beginning of the war. He was exactly like you were describing, mm-hmm. Izzy. He was really patriotic, and he wanted to do his duty. He got wounded, I think, and then he was in convalescence for like 2 years, I think, and that's when he met Siegfried Sassoon.
Mm.
Siegfried Sassoon already very anti-war, and it was Sassoon who actually said to him, "For God's sake, don't go back to the front."
Mm-hmm.
And he could have stayed because he had some kind of a job which would have, you know, he could have carried on serving, but in the UK.
And he had shell shock too, I think. No?
It could well be, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he decided in 1918, he decided to go back to the front, and he was killed a week before the armistice. Mm. Imagine that. And his mother, on the day of the armistice, so everyone's cheering and celebrating outside, and his mother got the telegram informing her of his death. And how tragic does it get? I mean, it's unbelievable.
Well, Sassoon, interestingly, did outlive the war, you know?
Yeah, he went on to live quite a while, actually, didn't he?
Yeah, he didn't die until 67.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Mm.
That's why, because he didn't go back, did he?
Well, I don't know, but he one of the things he did was write very, very movingly and about the war and also help poets like Owen, you know, get the due they deserved.
Yeah, yeah. So he was a good soul, guter Geist, as you'd say. Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what, seeing as we've been talking about these guys, shall we hear a poem by Wilfred Owen?
Oh, yeah. His most famous, perhaps.
Yeah, if you say so. I mean, he's written quite a few, but yeah, this one, I think this is my favorite anyway. It's Dulce et Decorum Est by Wilfred Owen. Dulce et Decorum Est by Wilfred Owen. Bent double, like old beggars under sacks. Knock-kneed, coughing like hags, we cursed through sludge. Till on the haunting flares we turned our backs, and towards our distant rest began to trudge. Men marched asleep. Many had lost their boots, but limped on bloodshod. All went lame, all blind, drunk with fatigue. Deaf even to the hoots of gas shells dropping softly behind. Gas. Gas! Quick, boys! An ecstasy of fumbling, fitting the clumsy helmets just in time. But someone still was yelling out and stumbling and floundering like a man in fire or lime. Dim through the misty panes and thick green light, as under a green sea, I saw him drowning. In all my dreams, before my helpless sight, he plunges at me, guttering, choking, drowning. If, in some smothering dreams, you too could pace behind the wagon that we flung him in, and watch the white eyes writhing in his face, his hanging face, like a devil's sick of sin. If you could hear at every jolt the blood come gargling from the froth-corrupted lungs, bitter as the cud of vile, incurable sores on innocent tongues. My friend, you would not tell with such high zest to children ardent for some desperate glory the old lie, dulce et decorum est, pro patria mori.
Oh, wow. So if my Latin comes in, well, if I remember my Latin correctly, then the old lie is, it's sweet and honorable to die for your home country.
Exactly. Yeah. Correct.
Mm. Which bit of irony there, maybe.
Mm. Sounds very ironic, doesn't it? I'm tasting the irony, the bitter irony.
I think it's Horace.
Orlando? Is that security guard looking at us?
Over there?
Yeah, that one.
No, you're getting paranoid.
No, look, he's getting his walkie-talkie out.
Oh, God. Jessica?
Well...
Let's move on.
But I thought we were sort of, you know, having the moment to really enjoy and think about the litter aspects of the First World War. We're just getting warmed up.
Well, I sort of feel like Wilfred Owen captures it all so neatly, you know. I feel there's nothing to add to that, really. To that
summarized everything,
right?
Hasn't he?
Yeah. So, you really wanted to see that Troubles exhibition, didn't you?
Should we just go there? Yeah, I guess we should get on then. But, okay, all right, then let's move.
Yeah, let's go. Good idea.
Let's go. Orlando, what are we going to do?
Absolutely no idea.
I think we should tell Jessica.
Yeah, but if we do that, that makes her an accessory like you.
Like me?
Yeah, well, you're not innocent either. I mean, you ate the sandwich.
But I'm not the one who stole it, so I'm clearly innocent.
I only stole it so that you would stop complaining.
Oh, yeah, it's all my fault now, is it?
Oh, no, come on. Look. Let's get to the Troubles exhibition and take it from there, okay?
Yeah, very apt title for our situation. Hey, by the way, thanks for the sandwich.
Yeah, exactly.
You didn't fill up your thermos by any chance, did you?
Of course I did. Shall we... we could have a tea break.
Oh, that would be fantastic.
Actually, maybe laying low might be an idea. Yeah. That corner over there looks pretty deserted.
Ooh, yeah, that looks like... seems like a plan to me.
Jessica?
Yeah?
Shall we stop for a cup of tea?
Well, I guess why not? But it is pretty funny. I thought we were in a rush to get to the Troubles exhibit. But all right, sure, let's stop for some tea.
I can't help it. I can't help it. I'm British. We have to stop.
Okay, well then.
So here we are, Jessica. A little bit of tea for you.
Just to explain our little ritual to you, Jessica. So in the past few days, we've always stopped about halfway through the episode to sit down, have a cup of tea, and write some poetry.
Oh, tea and poetry. Yeah. Well, I guess I certainly, you know, can't object to that.
Two go together, don't they?
Yes.
Yeah.
Like ham and eggs. Here, Izzy, have a.
Thank you.
Cup.
Fantastic. Well, cheers. Seeing that we're in a bit of a rush to get to the next exhibition, I thought maybe we could do a very short form again, like the haiku. Mm. So, do you know...
Is there another form?
Yeah, there is. Do you know the cinquain?
I do not.
So...
Please enlighten.
Yeah, so as the name suggests, cinq, five.
Okay.
Was
that French?
That is French. That was supposed to be French. I don't speak French. But yeah, it's a five-line poem. And like the haiku, it counts syllables. So the first line has 2 syllables, the second has 4 syllables, the third 6 syllables, the fourth 8 syllables.
And if my mathematics is correct, which usually isn't, the fifth 10?
It could be, but no, it's actually just 2.
I see.
It goes
so
back to 2.
There's no logic involved in this inquiry.
Yeah, but anyway, so you've got 2, 4, 6, 8, and then back to 2.
Okay, sounds interesting.
Oh, okay. Well, let's do
shall
it.
Shall we write one then?
Well, yeah. What should be our theme? Yeah.
Ireland?
Yeah.
Seeing as we're heading in that direction. Okay,
cool.
Ireland.
Okay, well, I'm going to get out some paper and pen and...
Yeah. And scribble away.
Well, okay, since Izzy explained it so well, I was able to whip one up. Let's
You're
see.
You're very fast.
Well, I don't know, but let's give it a go. It's called The Green Isle. Wake up 3 silent things. Green field, dairy cows, lambs. Our car whisks by, hedges sheared tight. Now pause.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway,
makes me yearn
trying to
for
be
Ireland.
Atmospheric.
I was in the middle of Donegal, a pint of Guinness coming towards me. Mm. Very nice. Yeah. Sorry, those are all the cliches of Ireland. I shouldn't be.
Well, this is too.
So, okay?
Yes.
Still nice. Yeah.
All right. I've written one about my favorite Irish Gaelic expression because I took a semester of Irish Gaelic at uni.
Did you?
Yeah. Wow, you've done everything.
You really have.
So, because there's so many letters in that language and only 10% of them are pronounced. And my favorite expression is Iwa. Which
Iwa.
You'd think it would just be like I and then wa. Mm. But it's actually spelled O-I-C-H-E-M-H-A-I-T-H. So it's...
So Oiche
Meth.
Meth. Crystal
but
meth.
Pronounced Iwa-ish.
Don't
Iwa.
Go there.
It sounds Japanese.
So anyway, I wrote a cinquain about that.
Okay.
Iwa. It means good night. Just 2 short syllables, but so many silent letters. Good night.
Good night to you.
Nice.
Cool. We've learned something.
Yeah,
a little bit
Iwa.
Of Gaelic. Iwa. Iwa. So would they understand if you say that in Ireland, do they understand you?
What? Probably not. I think my pronunciation is
Do you know
terrible.
What good morning is?
No.
Okay.
Do you?
Well, I do not.
Is it maybe it's...
The only other thing I can remember is the weather is good or terrible.
And how do those...
That pretty much summarizes Irish weather
right?
anyway,
it's
doesn't it?
Yeah. Ta and the weather is good is ta and amsher go ma.
Okay.
Ah.
Go ma.
Again.
Go ma. So it's very Japanese for some reason. Yeah, yeah.
It's
like in Welsh, no smoking, it's the only Welsh word I know, is dim usmugi.
Dim usmugi. Nice.
My favorite Welsh word, I learned this and I'm so happy, it's for a microwave, it's poppity ping.
No,
truly.
Really?
Yeah, poppity but they ping. Don't use it. They say microwave instead, and I think that's just wrong.
No, that is wrong.
There's poppity ping.
If you've got a word
yeah.
like that, you've
well,
got
I'd
to
like
it.
To adopt that as well.
Right, I think
yeah.
we should, yeah.
Poppity ping. Fantastic. Okay. I'm sorry. My cinquain is a little bit political, but I'm sort of feeling the troubles coming towards us so
yes.
in more ways than one. So I'm going to read... Mine's called Border. Border. Walls. Checks. Patrols, security measures in meters of fear and mistrust take root.
Mm. What I like about the way the cinquain works is those last lines. It almost, you know, you have to boil it all down. It's kind of a mini version of a sonnet, you know. You've got
yeah.
you know, those last... After
a little couplet at the
yeah,
end.
Yeah, right.
A mono-couplet.
Exactly, because it gets you to, you know, to usually do those monosyllabic words in 2 of them. You know,
kind of a distillation, isn't it?
Yeah, nice.
Yeah.
Well,
there's another guard looking at us, Orlando. Let's. How about we get moving again?
Yeah, good idea.
I'm really in the mood
Absolutely.
For some
but
Irish.
But you guys are. I mean, this is quite a pace. Are you, do we really have to run?
Yeah, I normally go for a jog at this time in the morning, particularly in museums.
Yes,
actually, you too, as you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
Okay. Right. Well, I mean, if we're going to run, let's try and make it fun.
God, I think my sausage roll is beginning to repeat.
Do you want to try a quiz about Irish history, about
the troubles?
Sorry,
no, I can't do a quiz and run at the same time.
Really?
So okay, how far away?
You
okay, well, let's stop. Let's walk fast.
But yeah,
that's
and,
nice.
let's do a quiz. Yeah, quiz about Irish history. Jessica, have you got one? Have you prepared anything?
No, I didn't.
Well, you know, I've got this bag full of all kinds of things. And I just happen to have a little quiz with me. Sure.
Very, very good, because I don't think we prepared one. We normally do. But.
No, with, you know, happy to oblige.
Yeah, I mean, since we're thinking about words, you know, Gaelic words, what about, do you know where the term the Troubles came from?
The Troubles.
The Troubles.
They always put it, you know, many people still even put it in quotation marks, single quotes. Uppercase.
I always feel like it's some sort of euphemism because, you know, it sounds like such a diminishing way to describe what happens.
It does, doesn't it? It sounds like something you might say after having had a very large curry or something. I've got a case of the Troubles. I don't want to seem disrespectful.
I mean, I do think the Irish like euphemisms. You know, they kind of thought of the Great War as the inconvenience.
Yeah.
You know,
right?
so if you think about euphemism, can you imagine a context in which maybe a euphemism might be used?
The Troubles.
Because I think you guys are kind of competitive about your quizzes.
We're always competitive,
so, you know, Izzy, maybe any thoughts? You know, it'd be nice to get a point early on.
No.
You're giving Izzy unfair advantage.
Well, I think she sometimes, you know, well, no, she doesn't need it, certainly. But you know, I'm, you know, team girls, you know.
Team girls. I see how this is turning out now. Yeah, okay, brilliant.
But I don't know. Do you know, Orlando?
I have no idea.
No idea.
You're going to have to enlighten both of us.
Oh, all right. Well,
you're going to get a point yourself here.
Well, I've got the answers that assist me. But you know, the term of troubles actually arises out of the context of Irish wakes and funerals, because what you would say to the family of the deceased when you would offer your condolences, you would say, "I'm sorry for your troubles." Yeah. And so from this euphemism, it got expanded to a larger political context. And, you know, so the Northern Ireland conflict, which began in 1968 with the Civil Rights March in Derry, was one such context. But sometimes people had even used it to discuss the earlier period of the Anglo-Irish War from 1919 to 1921.
Okay.
Yeah.
So they expand the phrase, the Troubles, that it goes all the way back to 1916.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
A lot of troubles, right?
A lot of troubles. It's a whole 20th century troubles. I think there's much longer than just that.
And maybe
for
21st
Irish
century
troubles
as well, right? I mean, it hasn't finished yet, has it? It's just kicking off again, maybe. Let's hope not. But
21st, yes.
Well, right. So nil at the moment.
Okay, all right. Then let me ask a question that has to do with maybe dates. Do you know when the border between the Republic of Ireland and Northern Ireland was established?
Ooh, was that at the end of the Anglo-Irish War you mentioned, 1921?
Well, yes, I mean, you're actually right that they sort of, let me give you that point, because it was established in 1920. However, the Anglo-Irish Treaty in 1921 made it an official international border. So, yes, it kind of started, but it was a longer process.
De facto.
Yes, and then it wasn't until 1925 that actually it was established as permanent.
I'm expecting a similar amount of leeway, by the way, if I get a question relatively right.
Well, it was right.
It was.
Okay. I'm just looking at, you know, the UN definition of
exactly. I see.
Well, okay, if we're going for that, let me just ask you then, but of course a question for both of you.
Yeah.
How long is that border between the UK and the Irish Republic? Any thoughts? You know, want to give a random guess?
Is it if I get it within 50 kilometers or 75 kilometers?
Well,
would that
50.
Be allowable?
Okay.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna say 250.
Well, that's on the nose. I can't even give Izzy a chance to counter that. I guess I should have played dumb and then give her the chance. So I guess he gets that point. Then.
Is that on the nose?
250. Yeppers.
Is it really? Do I get an extra bonus point for getting it
wrong?
No.
We're not going into bonus points at this point. Maybe at the end if there's a tie.
Okay. So it's one all.
Yes. Good. Well, okay. So let me just, this is for both of you, maybe the question of, do you know what the phrase a blanket protest refers to? Anybody?
A blanket process. We do say in the English language, don't we, sort of blanket approval or blanket sort of referred to as sort of a sweeping thing
that
covers a lot of
bases. But that's a metaphorical blanket.
Mm-hmm. But does it come from that? The thing
is
that
it a literal blanket.
This is a literal blanket.
Oh, a literal blanket.
Yeah, we're, you know.
Sounds very appealing at this precise juncture.
Yes, a blanket. We could all make blanket protests.
We could sit down and drink our tea with a blanket over us.
This is, you know, quite a tragic one. It's not in any comfortable setting.
Mm. Okay.
Can you imagine where you might, you know, less comfortable?
Nothing is springing to mind at the moment, is he? What do you think?
No, somewhere out on the street, you know, protesting.
Yeah. Homelessness, maybe?
I guess, actually, that's an interesting idea, too, certainly. But in the context of Northern Ireland, it refers to in the Mays prison, there was, starting, you know, when the Republican, the paramilitary prisoners were, incarcerated, sometimes in a mass incarceration without even, you know, if you just were suspected of paramilitary, actions, they could put you in without any trial. And they felt they needed a special status, a special category status, which meant they didn't have to wear the uniforms that the other prisoners wore.
Right.
And because they weren't given this status, they instead decided just throw the uniforms off and just wrap a blanket around themselves.
I see.
Right.
Yeah, it was quite uncomfortable, I'm sure, just to go with a bank.
And that's where the phrase blanket protest
came
from.
Okay. Mm-hmm. And I mean, the blanket protest actually is what led to the beginning of the hunger strikes in 1981.
I feel another question coming on.
Well, there were 10 Republican prisoners that died, and I wonder, do either of you know who the first one was?
I think I might, actually, because I just read a book or series of books by a guy called Adrian McKinty about an Irish, Northern Irish detective in Belfast in the time of the Troubles.
Yeah.
I think it's the 70s. And he mentions this guy. Is it Bobby Sands?
Ooh. So I think, what are we at? Is it 1-2? Is it
mm-hmm.
Because it's, that is
Does that
true.
Mean I got it right?
You did get,
yeah,
you did do so. He had been on hunger strike for 66 days then perished tragically. And of course, it was such an uproar followed his death on May 5th, 1981. So if we just sort of, you know, go back about, you know, a little bit of a decade to the Bloody Sunday, the event that happened on the 30th of January, 1972, do you know, this was actually, it was a march through Derry that the Northern Ireland Civil Rights Association organized. Do you know who inspired them?
Ooh, who, as in?
Yeah, like why? What kind of inspired them in their non-violent protests and the marches that they were doing?
Do you mean like there was some other event? Which
well, another movement that gave them the courage to do what they were doing in the early 70s.
I see.
Could that have been the civil rights movement?
Yes, indeed. So very true. So Martin Luther King really lived big. And even so, while they were doing that march in Derry, they recited the civil rights, "We Shall Overcome."
So 1-1.
Absolutely.
Yeah,
so it's fascinating. Yeah. That inspired that particular event. Did inspire a lot of responses. And I wonder, you know, we all know the U2 famous song that was done much later, but just in the few weeks thereafter, a particular musician that you both know also wrote a song in response. And in fact, it was even banned from UK radio. Who did the song?
Well, I mean, there are so many British musicians. Can you give us a bit of a clue, Jessica?
Okay, well, let me just say, he's one of the most famous living British musicians that there is.
He's still alive. Okay.
He's still alive. He really changed, you know, rock music, pop, well, not pop, rock.
Okay.
Uh-huh. Any guesses?
Can you sing any of his songs?
Well, if I even did a little bit of one, you'd immediately know. Do you want that much of a hint? I could just go, "Yesterday."
Well, now we both know.
Now we both know.
Yeah. Shall we declare it an honorable draw?
Yeah, and name it now, though.
Okay, I'll say the first half, you say the second. Sir Paul
McCartney.
Yes. Yeah. You wouldn't by chance know the song, I guess, the title. No?
No.
I don't think so.
This was actually performed with his band. Okay, hey, what band was he in at the time? Do you know the band after the Beatles that McCartney was?
Oh, now that's a question. Now we're venturing into the realms of popular culture. About which I know nothing.
Wings was the name of the band.
Say again?
Wings.
Oh, of course, Wings.
Yes, of course you do.
And now I know it now.
So he went around and sung this song, which is Give Ireland Back to the Irish. He went around to the universities in Wales and England and did these little pop-up concerts, singing the song Amazing. That was forbidden from the radio.
Jessica, yeah, I have surprised. To say, this yeah. is a first on the Poetry Pod that Izzy and I have actually tied in a quiz.
It's good. Should I give you just one?
No, definitely not. We should leave it like this in the interest of...
So that you can resolve it another
No, we don't need to resolve it. It is resolved, isn't it? It's in the interest of pacifism.
Oh, I guess you're right. Nonviolent.
That's true.
But it's interesting to talk about this from the Give Ireland Back to the Irish, because, I mean, I remember growing up in the UK always seeing it, obviously, from a British perspective. Mm-hmm. We always heard about all of the bombs going off. We heard about the soldiers and, obviously, things always being told from Jim Callaghan or Mrs. Thatcher's perspective and how difficult the Irish were being, and Sinn Féin and Gerry Adams, Martin McGuinness being tricky characters. But we never saw things from the Irish perspective, the Northern or the Republican perspective whatsoever.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's a perspective worth thinking about. Also, even what it must have been like to have grown up in that kind of environment, to have known no other, context. And a really fascinating, wonderful poet, her name is Colette Bryce, and she grew up in Derry. And I don't know if you know how Derry is the walled city, and it also has all these peace walls that intersect it. So she lived, with not only the border, of Northern Ireland, but also her city being bordered and the borders within her city. There was no space for her that was not intruded upon by that presence of being occupied. In fact, I could read a poem in which she describes that experience.
What's it called?
Well, this is called simply The Brits.
The Brits.
And it's from 2014. All right, I'll give it a go. I wish I had her beautiful Northern Irish accent, which I don't, but I'll do my best. Whatever it was they were looking for, they like to arrive in the small hours, take us by surprise, avoiding our eyes like gormless young fellers shuffling at a dance. My mother spoke, a nod from the leader, and the batch of heavy rifles was stacked clackety-clack, like a neat campfire under the arch of the hall table. Her one condition, with so many children in their beds, each gun placed by a soldier whose face, for an instant, hung in the mirror. This done, the load of them thundered up the stairs, filling our rooms like news of a tragedy. Last night I dreamt of tiny soldiers, like the action figures I played with as a child. Fay Ray soldiers in the clumsy hands of Kong, little Hasbro troopers in the massive hands of God. I'd like to remove their camouflage and radios, to dress them up in doll-sized clothes, little high street shirts, jeans, trainers, the strip of ordinary sons and brothers. I'd like to hand them back to their mothers.
Yeah, so that was a fantastic poem, and actually very unusual to hear it about something about the Troubles from the eyes of a child.
I think it, one of the things that that Bryce likes to think a lot about is scale. And certainly here we have the sense of the experience of what it's like to be small and powerless, as, certainly not only children felt, but then also fascinating to assume the role of the mother, to play that figure of morality and conscience.
Yeah.
I wonder, what did you guys have as experiences as children? Did you ever feel powerless, or were there any ways fantasy spaces where you could feel powerful again? Did you play video games?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Video games?
Absolutely,
Absolutely. My generation was, we were really the first video gamers. Yeah, we had Sega Mega Drive, Nintendo, Intellivision. Yeah, we were the very Atari.
Atari. I haven't heard that word for a while.
No, I used to have one, and all my friends had one. That's what we used to do. Yeah, our parents used to spend the whole time trying to get us off them.
Could you perhaps remember Super Mario? That was a game a lot of times.
Yeah, Super Mario.
Because you know what's fascinating is there's another poet. The last poet we just had was from Derry. We have a poet from Belfast, Stephen Sexton, and he has written a sequence of poems that was published in 2019 called "If All the World and Love Were Young." And it's entirely a sequence of Super Mario poems.
Wonderful. So for all Sega Mega Drive.
I mean, fascinating. Anyway, so, lovers. I mean, maybe we should check out one of those. And, you know, it also, there's one poem in this sequence that actually is about the Troubles and about one of the most tragic single events in the history of the Troubles that happened actually in the year of the Good Friday Agreement. Do you know what year that was, by chance?
Is this the unofficial sixth question?
Okay, no, need not be, but... No? Okay, 1998. And then on August 15th, in Omaha, there was a horribly tragic bombing that killed, 29, and 25 of those were Spanish tourists, many children among them. And actually, Stephen Sexton, he writes about that in a poem. Maybe, Izzy, here I have a copy here in my big bag of all kinds of goodies. Would you like to read it?
Sure, absolutely. So this is Stephen Sexton, Forest of Illusion 3. It's almost the end of summer and Saturday. The radio in the kitchen is a havoc of Omar way beyond the lock and of Slevin's, the chemist's shop, of children running in the road, of a group of Spanish tourists, of the Assumption of Mary, insofar as it can be seen. I pause in the darkened forest. With a dram of soap and water, my brother blows bubbles all day, each of iridescent shimmer, each a shallow breath in transit.
Wow, that's read so beautifully and with such, I just love the way you read those final lines. These poems actually, Stephen, when I asked if we could read some of his work here, he told me a little bit about his poems. And this larger sequence is about the death of his mother. And she was undergoing cancer treatment at the same time while he was playing Super Mario. So he begins to associate those two together. And so, the sense of the shallow breath and transit, the way you read that so beautifully, he sort of thinks a lot about that, the breathing.
It's good to have these background facts, because of course you'd never know that reading it, would you? That's where he's coming from on this, you know.
And so the vulnerability he felt as a 9-year-old in the year of that summer with the bombing in Omaha, he felt both personally and then also culturally. So yeah, I mean, there was also this reference to bubbles. Do you remember from Super Mario anything about bubbles? Do you remember in the landscape there would be
vaguely in the sort of in the dark recesses of my memory? I do vaguely remember something to do with bubbles, and if they burst, you fell down or something. What happened?
Bubbles and they're bombs. You see these, objects that seem harmless that actually are very, tragic.
Okay.
Anyway, thank you. Thank you.
Metaphorical. Yeah, beautiful. So, I mean, these are sort of taking us back to 1998, but this is quite a few years ago, amazingly enough, because they've gone fast enough. But we may be kicking off again. I mean, look at Brexit and hard, soft borders in Northern Ireland. I mean, border controls, the EU, the border to Britain, and, of course, also... we think of walls. I mean, think of the wall between the U.S. and Mexico, which our friend Donald Trump has just erected or made even bigger. The wall between Palestine and Israel. I mean, these are current problems we're facing. Is there any literature which covers this in Ireland at the moment?
It is very interesting when thinking about poems and the line. Did you notice anything about the lines in that poem that you read aloud?
It seems like it was always 16 syllables. So
yeah, very, very long lines. It sort of like seems
counted.
Like a border. Yeah, which, you know, Stephen had told me is, you know, a reference in that particular case to the 16-bit console that he played his video games on. But, you know, other poets use this idea of the wall in a very literal way. And we can think about one particular poem, which is even called Wall, and it's by the a poet who's from West Donegal, Anne-Marie Neherahan, and this is a poem, 2016. She actually started composing it while she was in the United States, and thinking a bit about that border you mentioned between Mexico and the U.S., and she has blocked it off as a prose poem with these forceful borders left and right that feel impenetrable.
This poem is prefaced with a quote from the Mexican writer Rosario Castellanos, who says, "Between all of them they raise, little by little, a wall that will keep out the thing that lies waiting for the tiniest crack of silence to steal through." Wall. First, a wall that contracts me out of my unfurled state. Next, one that divides me from my own kin. It is the same wall I am sitting on when Green, aged 9, is pulled from the schoolyard for yelling. Dicks and fannies are what make babies. I thought I could fly, I said, when asked why I'd hurled myself forward, arms outspread and eyes closed tight to the world. There are the wall boys who want in under your bra with their cold fingers, and the wall girls who will teach you how to leave a bite. There is the wall that goes up inside you the first time you're called a slut. There is the wall of grinning wet-lipped farmers that gathers around the teenage girls at the local beauty pageant show as you, in a borrowed dress, are herded into the ring. Writer, wrong answer, and you lose to the sergeant's daughter. It could have been you, the barman sighs as he swipes the taps with a dirty cloth. It could have been me. But instead, I am scored out of 10 and told to try again next year. I am 16 by the time a fire in my chest begins to burn from the inside out. I am 17 when I learn how to starve myself. I am 18 the summer. I join my brothers in the building trade, laying concrete, smoothing lines of dark wet cement. I am standing on the site early one morning with a hot sun in my eyes and a brick in my hand, when a man dares to ask me, what do you know about walls?
And that was such a beautiful reading from Anne-Marie Neherahan herself of the poem Wall.
Lovely to hear another voice, wasn't it?
Absolutely, yeah. And it's been so great hearing all of these poets.
Yeah, I think thank you to them.
I think we should extend
poets.
A big thank you to our poets, to Colette Bryce,
totally.
To Stephen Sexton, to Anne-Marie Neherahan, for letting us read their poems.
Absolutely. If I remember correctly from my Irish Gaelic classes, which are a long time ago.
Here it comes.
I think it's Go Rev Mat Agot.
Go Rev Mat
Agot.
Agot.
Go Rev Mat, I think.
Meaning
is,
thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. I just say thank you.
Well, yeah.
Thanks.
Apologies
Cheers.
To those who speak Gaelic.
Slauncher. Yes. Slauncher.
But, you know, I have to say, all this running is making me quite peckish. Anyone for a sausage roll, perhaps?
Security alert. We now have a description of the two perpetrators who have been stealing. We're looking for an attractive young woman in functional outdoor clothing, possibly with twigs in her hair, and an old, bald man.
Thank God.
What do you mean, thank God?
Well, that can't be us, can it? I mean, I may be a bit thin on top, but I'm not old.
Well, and I'm not attractive, is what you're saying, is that it?
Do you want them to find us?
That did sound a bit like you both, right?
Thank you.
Thank you very much, I don't think.
Well, actually, Izzy, can you turn your head this way. Yeah. I've got to remove that twig from your hair there.
Yeah, thanks.
And maybe it's now time for you guys to fess up. What did you do?
Okay, might as well come clean about this. Can't keep this up for too much longer. Look, I took a lunchbox by mistake. I mean, I didn't mean to, but Izzy was upset you didn't have a sausage roll. I happened to be in the showers. There were all of these lunchboxes open. It seemed to call out to me. It wanted to be found. What could I do?
How can a lunchbox call out to you?
I don't know. I mean, I was hungry.
In the showers?
Full of sausage rolls. It's not non sequitur, but it happened. I can't, you know, ours is not to reason why. Look, here's the lunchbox.
Don't drag Wilfred Owen into this.
Oh, I'm trying not to.
I hope you two are feeling fit.
Why?
Look, they've just caught up with us.
Oi! Give me back my lunchbox!
Oh my God, run!
Run, this way!
Quick,
this way!
Oh God, I can't run any faster. Sausage roll is coming back.
Oh no, Orlando, I'm not going to carry you again.
No, I can't run anymore.
Hey, they're not with me! I don't know these two!
Jessica, how could you? It's the lunchbox they want.
Ditch it.
This show was recorded at a social distance and according to COVID guidelines.